The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Gamefly, and you listeners right now can go to gameflyoffer.com/lasertime to get a free month of unlimited games.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where our slogan is listen and be damned for all eternity. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, and I've been working with a shattered pelvis for 3 weeks. And who else is here with me today?
Oh, hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and we're putting that bitch on ice. Man, why can't I think of a better one?
And who else is here?
Chris, Corruptus Extremis Antista.
And?
Special guest!
Brett Elston, and I'm not wearing a tie at all.
Oh, my God!
Ooh, and he's going to win.
This is the Lasertime Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons, and today's episode is Margin Chains...
And Stone's chewable morphine.
Tell me, Sheriff Flobo.
OJ, morphine.
Flobo.
OJ, morphine.
Flobo.
And this aired on May 6, 1993, when Sheriff Lobo was still relevant. And Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in history.
As a matter of fact, I will. Kevin Kline charms the pants off the nation in the newly released movie Dave. Cheers is number one on television, and a fresh-faced Simpsons writer appears on David Letterman to talk about seceding the show. That would be Conan O'Brien.
Wow. That'll be this fall, right?
Yeah, so he's currently in the middle of working on Homer Goes to College, the season 5 episode. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I guess they're probably done with it at this
He's
point.
He's working on everything.
Yeah,
but is getting ready to leave and having to pay Fox a lot of money to get out of his contract.
Not in terms of late-night TV contracts. Getting out for $200,000.
I guess not, yeah.
Yeah, he still owes them scripts, is what I hear.
I believe Craig Ferguson had to be given $10 million for not getting Letterman's job.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that was a great deal in his contract that said, like, if I will sign this new contract if I don't inherit Letterman's show, you owe me $10 million.
That makes Stephen Colbert worth $10 million more.
True. For a not highly rated show that also he really should be, you know, singing more in cars or doing hopscotch.
It is the best one of its kind in that time slot.
Yeah. Seth Meyers still at it. He's
different
doing
time slot
stuff.
Though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some production details about this episode. This is actually Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein's first episode as staff writers. And they were sort of given this idea. On the commentary, they say...
they were freelancers when they did Marge Goes to Work.
I think they were just story editors. They moved up the chain to become actual producers. And on the commentary, they say that new writers are given Marge episodes, I think because no one wants to write them. And they're also the hardest episodes to write because Marge is a tough nut to crack if you're a male comedy writer, a single male comedy writer.
I'm 24 and a Harvard graduate. What do I know about women?
Yes.
Well, we'll see that from all the clips of her. She is like not the star of this.
No, this episode is called Marge in Chains, but it's really like Marge on Trial, and Lionel Hutz is the true breakout star of this episode. I think this is probably his best episode out of all the Lionel Hutz appearances.
This feels like a tour de force of it reminds me of the Auto Show where they're just like, let's do every joke about Auto we can. Mm-hmm. And this one too is just like, this is every Hutz joke and we'll never bring Hutz back because we're just doing too many jokes with him. Did you know that it wasn't a sequel episode, but in the season 27 finale last year, Marge goes to prison again, this time for 90 days, but it much more focuses on her story in prison, and it's about her seeing prison as an escape from her family, and she'd rather be there than at home.
Yeah, apparently the original script of this episode that Oakley and Weinstein wrote had a lot of Marge in prison, and it was a fairly realistic portrayal of prison. They did a lot of research into, like, what happens in prison if you're a woman? Like, who do you meet? What do you do? But they thought, you know, the other stuff was a lot funnier, so it got cut.
Do they toss salads with syrup and jelly, or do they expand it?
Well, why would they need to toss salads?
Let me consult this HBO special.
I've seen some documentaries on Cinemax about this.
A little documentary called Caged Heat.
But why would you toss salad when you just the other side you'd be tossing something, right?
I have no idea. I've never seen a woman before. No idea.
We are Simpsons nerds.
I can't believe they invented it. Huh?
Yes, we got Troy bringing us in.
Hello, everybody. I'm Troy McClure, star of such films as P is for Psycho and The President's Neck is Missing.
Wow.
But now I'm here to tell you about a remarkable new invention. Until now, this was the only way to get juice from an orange.
With your eye.
Yeah. Right, like, over your eye, not even your forehead.
Cracking
your
it
eye.
Against your forehead.
That reminds me of every infomercial where it's like, don't let this happen to you. And there's a Tumblr of every animated GIF from those commercials where people are just like knocking shit over.
Yeah,
well, they can't live their lives. Yeah.
Part of a thanks Obama meme.
We did a pretty good parody of that for that Games Radar app.
Oh, that was so
day,
funny.
Which we shot in one day, but it had the usual, is this too much work?
I wrote the line, I can't beat the last Boston Rock Band. It's a good game joke.
And this whole scene it's like a sequel joke. One of these things you'd see a lot in season four of, like, this sequence was funny in season three, so let's return to it. They last did this in the Bart's Soapbox Derby episode.
Oh, yeah, the tombstone polish.
Yeah, and so this is basically the same bit.
Is this to reuse the animation?
No, it's not reused animation, but it probably reuses the same, like, setup and background. But this time, like, in the opening, it was three different items that they pretty much just cut into the original footage.
Full microwave.
And the showrunners of this time said that their strategy is to open with a parody to start things off on a funny note, and then you can go into the story. And they do that often, Al Jean and Mike Reese.
And by the way, you can get your own car chandelier on Etsy right now. They sell them. I think Sun and Run is a lame joke.
It pretty is.
It is. It's just a peep joke.
Nice to have Dr. Nick back.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
Troy, would you like a glass of orange juice?
I sure would. But won't we have to pay those outrageous grocery store prices for something the farmer probably spit in?
Anymore. All thanks to the new juice loosener.
Doctor, are you sure it's on? I can't hear a thing.
It's Whisper Quiet.
That is two lines I use to this day. It's Whisper Quiet, and you got all that from one bag of oranges.
Yeah, this is really Phil Hartman's episode. I forgot about this opening bit with Troy McClure in it, too. Jesus.
That should have been, I meant that to be my opening joke, something the farmer probably spit in.
just the 70s movies with the dumb titles. Like, before, I think he'd only called back to mostly industrial films that he'd done, and this is when they get real silly with shitty, like, 1970s family.
He did have
movies.
Calling All Quakers.
Was that already in there?
Yeah. But, like, I mean, we heard him in Calling All Quakers.
I just feel like he hasn't even done eight yet. We haven't heard eight Troy McClure movies at this point.
I think so. And I love Homer's fevered dialing in to get, he's like, I've got to get this thing, I got to get it. They're getting a shit from Osaka, which is something like they could do Tokyo, but they did Osaka. I feel like they were trying to pick a less famous, even though that's like saying, well, they did LA instead of New York. They went with the more obscure city in America. Like,
well,
but
wasn't this based on a real thing? I thought it was on the news, and this.
If only there was a show that dug into what happened in the 60s.
It definitely, look, I have a lot of research
but
here, I'm ready for it, but not this.
The reason why I didn't research I thought the joke was based on a real thing, but the real thing was an old fucking wives' tale. Mm-hmm. Like, you probably got sick from that Japanese item, like that kind of urban legend. Placing in Osaka is a very specific thing to do.
It might have just been like at the time there was a notable outbreak of flu or a virus.
I could have sworn there was.
And then it was on our news for like a week, and then
in a way
it
seems
know,
to presage bird flu instead.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I feel like it's just a normal thing to fear stuff coming from the Orient that would be, and that is an offensive term.
SARS?
I don't mean.
Like, that wasn't that long ago.
It was in 93, though. Like, so.
I'm just saying, the urban legend stereotype of diseases being brought over from Japan has been around for a while.
This scene also has a bad Japanese dub joke, which I think will soon become a joke no one understands.
Yeah, it doesn't. And, I mean, it was mocking. I guess dubs weren't great in 93.
No.
Guess, but it's a Godzilla reference, especially.
Yeah. Like, and I recently watched Mothra for the first time, and I feel like it was like, let's tell white people to be Japanese, but they don't know what Japanese people sound like, so everybody talks really haltingly like this,
because this is
what a foreign person sounds like. Mm. Yeah. But they don't do the LR thing. They just kind of like speak really haltingly because they're trying to match the lip flaps, but it's like, I guess this is what a Japanese person sounds like. It's very strange, but you hear that in this scene.
Is that right, Tabana?
Yeah. And just speak quickly because the.
Okay, so here is some research for you, Brett.
You gotta take it if you can give it.
So the box that is being shipped is to 742 Evergreen Terrace, which I do believe, and I double check this. This is the first time the Simpsons address has been 742 Evergreen Terrace.
It was wrong just a couple of
episodes ago. For previous reference in season 4, New Kid on the Block, Bart tells Mo to come kill Jimbo at 1094 Evergreen Terrace.
That's true.
And then meanwhile, in Homer's Triple Bypass during the cops in Springfield, they're breaking into 742 Evergreen Terrace, which is where it's where Snake and Lovejoy live next door to each other, and so that about Snake's house. So this, I believe, is that was just 7 episodes ago. So this, I believe, is the first time the Simpsons house has been 742 Evergreen.
That was a good catch.
This blunder made me hate the whole episode. No, I'm not that person. But it's lovely to think about it. Well, it's just a human writers coming up with this, and someone probably thought that was the address they came up with for The Simpsons.
Now it's set in stone.
Yeah.
It wasn't made to be wiki. Like, that's the difference between it and, say, when Community started, I feel like they were already cataloging their facts from the beginning. Or even on South Park, they were just like, we've counted everything, or we try to keep track of all these things. So then everybody gets the Osaka flu, which, again, talking about on the commentary, they said that they were told to read The Plague by Albert Camus.
And only one joke was based on it. I don't know what it was. They won't say. I've read The Plague, and I don't know what joke was.
I've only read The Stranger. I have not read The Plague.
I think it's the germ cloud stopping at a stoplight.
That's totally Camus. But we do see, I feel like it's the first personification of Skinner's mom as an angry woman.
Because she looks at him grumpily, but she doesn't say anything.
There's no lines, but I feel like she was just sort of a sweet old lady. And then after that Psycho reference happened, it was all downhill for her.
Agnes is really
one of two like very clear Psycho references.
It's in this episode, there's one.
Three, if you want to count the movie Troy McClure was in.
It's true. So everybody's getting sick. I like the personification of the germ cloud, and totally it's just covering everybody up.
And the sequence of Wiggum being haunted by it like the Blob.
He's shooting it.
He fires his gun at it.
Yeah, he gets a hot dog and then so I think he might have hit that hot dog.
It's the second time he's thrown his gun at a supernatural thing after running out of bullets. We had the Mummy in the Cops in Springfield parody.
That's right.
Yeah.
What is this clip?
Sarge, we keep getting orders to let the virus win.
Must be a school day. Lay down your arms.
All right. Let's make some puffs.
Bart's homeostasis.
Immune system.
Faking the Osaka virus?
It was him telling his blood cells to give in and get sick. Yeah. So it was inside of him. I definitely did this as a kid.
Me too.
Was like, could I force myself to get sick? I don't want to go to school.
To maintain a fever, I would do that thing where I try and bring all the blood to my head.
Yeah, you're like going Super Saiyan with a thermometer in your mouth. Yeah.
So I'm like, thank God I'm not the only one who did that. Yeah. Yes, I did it all the time.
This taught me that might work.
But why does the flu have Snake's voice?
That's why I wanted to play it. I got confused because I called the clip Snake Virus. I'm like, what the fuck was I talking about?
Also, why is the soldier the pimply voice teen or squeaky voice teen?
That's true. And then it was a great way to do a gross joke without pissing off the censors. Otto gets vomited on from the sky.
The dreaded Osaka flu has hit Springfield with over 300 cases now reported. Now over to Arnie Pie with Arnie in the Sky.
Route 401 is going around and around and around and around and around. And look out at the corner of 12th and Main, because I'm going to be sick. Whoop.
That's much worse than dropping his bagel.
A couple quick bits I like. Yeah. There's the itching, scratchy cartoon where I like when he lands on the cactus, the needles go directly through both his eyes. Like a nice touch. And then the joke of Burns saying he had like his germ-proof thing, even in first viewing when I was 10, I was like, Homer's in there. Like, Homer's going to open this door.
Such a big setup.
I did not expect it this time. So I don't remember Burns in this episode.
We also have... sorry, Brett.
Mm. No, I know they go to great lengths to like not set this any specific place, but the 401 sounds like a mix of the 101 and the 405, which are the two California main LA... Highways. Especially because they're writing this in LA, I assume.
You
must drive on one of those to do anything.
Yeah, to do anything. And
this episode ends with a very L.A. riot. Like, it was... So I definitely feel like L.A. is getting...
If you really want to find Springfield, there are mile markers in this episode, very briefly.
That's right. On the direction to Mexico.
If you can figure out where North Haverbrook is and triangulate with Mexico City.
It is on a map.
Which it had on a sign, and it was 630 miles away. Hmm. You don't need to tell anybody that early. That's an entire day's trip.
Well, maybe
that's the joke.
I must end my cameo, unfortunately. But... thank you for letting me join for
Brett. Thanks, Brett.
Send Brett off with a clip of Mayor Quimby on vacation.
Hey. Now for an emergency announcement from the mayor.
People of Springfield, because of the epidemic, I have canceled my vacation to the Bahamas. I shall not leave the city. Hey, you, get that steel drum out of the mayor's office.
Sorry, man.
So you couldn't have captured every flu clip, but we did have the first Married with Children parody. I think it's the inferior one because he doesn't flush the toilet after the joke is told. It's the
This episode could be all of the just have every clip, but Ned watched Married with Children, and that's why the family was damned.
He was damned for all eternity.
And so that's
okay. This is another thing cut out on my.
You're
twins.
Watching the wrong versions, Chris.
Sorry, man.
I've been seeing a lot of comments getting mad at Chris for not listening.
I'll lend you
the
DVDs, Chris, if you need them.
Whatever.
But okay. But so in that scene, that first has Todd. Todd speaking, Todd's like, scoff, scoff, loof, scoff, scoff, loof. So here's my theory. That Married with Children was nice to a degree. And it was pretty much a joke you would have seen on the show.
These plants are lifeless and limp.
Sounds like you in the bedroom, Al. Woo!
Yeah.
But I think they thought they could get the actors to do it.
Yeah.
I think they did. Because meanwhile, the next time we'll see a clip for Married with Children... it is a mean joke about how it's not good.
Let's have sex.
It is no pig, toilet flush. Yeah. Woo! Great.
A surprisingly puritan joke from The Simpsons. Otto got barfed on his face.
Yeah, like, they're on their high horse.
Yeah, what the fuck?
And then also comes the scene with Hibbert and the placebo. He's like, anything I give you, just be a placebo. Where can we get these placebos? That taught me the meaning of the word placebo.
Me too. I also like, I'm carrot, I mean, ouch.
Sadly, mine was 2-3 years later with brain candy.
Thank you,
Brendan Fraser.
And the, that's right. And the killer bees thing. So there was a box of killer bees, and that's what they eat. That was a very 90s fear. We were very afraid of, in the early 90s, we were very afraid of killer bees, at least I was.
A doctor would come out on a terrace and make pronouncements like an old politician.
And in the show, they're apparently being shipped somewhere.
So the fear, especially of killer bees or Africanized bees, they were discovered in a Texas town in 1990. And so people were just like, they could take over our regular bees and be killing us.
Somebody
all these bees.
Has probably pointed that out more comedically. We were constantly terrified by clouds of killer bees that were told were coming in the country.
Yeah.
And now all I hear about, like, the bees are almost gone.
We just got no bees.
We need the killer bees.
It's either no bees or killer bees. We'd have one of them.
So everyone in the Simpsons family is sick at this point.
Yeah.
And they all have different demands.
So Homer's in Burns's flu thing. He's in his germ-free thing eating a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And then in the next scene, he's in bed sick. I don't like that continuity.
He also uses the "I'm Mr. Burns"
That
joke.
Made that less predictable.
Yeah.
Like, okay, obviously Homer's going to be in there eating a big sandwich even. But then he's like, my name is Mr. Burns.
But I have that clip if we...
Smithers, this plague doesn't scare me. I've constructed a germ-free chamber for myself. Not a single microbe can get in or out. Who the devil are you?
Don't panic. Just come up with a good story. My name is Mr. Burns.
It's a good time killer.
Yeah, it's like almost every episode now, Homer talks to his own brain. It's wonderful.
But so then he is sick in a poor use of continuity.
Everybody's sick and Marge is highly put upon.
Mom, can you bring me more OJ? Can you give me some of those Flintstones chewable morphine?
There's no such thing.
Marge, the boy's wasting valuable time. Come change the channel and pat my head.
In a minute.
But I'll miss Sheriff Lobo.
And get me a bottle of bourbon.
Grandpa, you know you can't have liquids after 3 p.m.
You can stir it into my mush.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time I looked up Sheriff Lobo. I had read about it before the internet. It's like TV Guide presents the 50 worst TV shows ever to be like My Mother the Car and stuff like that. This time I looked it up and I read about it. Apparently it was a spinoff of BJ and the Bear, part of the brief strange trucker fad of the late 70s in which
Breaker
a trucker...
Breaker.
Yes, exactly. In which a trucker was teamed up with a chimpanzee named Bear.
Yep.
And Sheriff Lobo was the crooked, zany sheriff on BJ and the Bear. He was spun off into his own show that lasted like a season or two. I think maybe three seasons, actually.
Well,
79 to 81. Three seasons.
Claude Akins, who I only know from Master Ninja and Mystery Science Theater.
That's right. And, that's where he's... Yeah.
And it's like, you can, if you read about the history of the show, it like didn't do well, so they retooled it. And like, you don't think basing a show around a fat, corrupt, redneck cop... That's not the main problem. You want to replace everybody else?
The Lobo Show has been canceled for retooling. Do we have the theme song? I did send that to you because it is very much a...
different era.
Yes, again. Very, very much so.
There is a man, the legends tell, who stands for what is right. Like Wyatt Earp, he never shirks or cowers from a fight. He is our Sheriff Lobo, mighty Sheriff Lobo.
All right, it's enough. I believe the best description of this opening is he's on a collision course with wackiness.
It really is.
Yeah.
It is beautiful.
It's
a thing of beauty.
Despite all the references to Sheriff Lobo on Simpsons, which there have been, like, this is the second of three.
Yeah.
There's the sign, the itchy and scratchy thing, there's a sign. Oh, no, wait, maybe that's later. John Swartzwelder is in some picket line holding a sign, bring back Sheriff Lobo.
I thought that was Wagon Train.
Oh, it was Wagon Train.
Yeah,
Trigger.
The one you're thinking of is the Bobo episode, like, Lobo,
yes.
Bring back Sheriff Lobo.
That's the only other Lobo one, which it's funny that, like, the staffs of 4 and 5, which were very different, still had Homer love Sheriff Lobo.
It is the perfect dumb Homer show, though, about, like, a fat, crooked Southern sheriff.
A terrible show that nobody cares about. I give them credit, too. I only noticed this time the care they had to draw the Flintstones vitamins. Like, they really look like it.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
It's very good.
Blue or the red kind?
It was blue and pink, as I recall. Light blue, light pink.
I just want to eat that car and not Betty.
Yeah, that was the thing you'd see in a lot of Oakley Weinstein ones where Grandpa is there and you're like, why is even Grandpa in this scene? And then he'll say either the joke that ends the scene or a plot important moment. And him asking for the bourbon is plot important.
Yep, it is,
the only reason he's there.
And so she goes to the Quickie Bar.
Homer doesn't drink liquor.
No.
That's the only reason he's there.
He drinks beer. I guess they saw bourbon as an old man drink, though.
Yeah.
I'll have bourbon any day.
Bourbon's delicious.
Marge and the Quickie Mart, I got to give them thumbs up. Great animation for all the heads on the shelves.
This is Jim Reardon. It's his episode.
Oh, that's great. And he does Marge frazzled so well, too. And it's another of those moments where I think probably for at least a few minutes, I was like, oh, it's hard being a mother. It's really tough. Like,
then you're like, give me some potato chips.
I was here the opening scene and looked down for a second. I just assumed she was in a giant grocery store. And it was jarring. Like, that was the Quickie Mart? She walked for like a minute down the aisle.
It's kind of like not cost effective to do all of your grocery shopping at the convenience store because it's
really
a convenience
expensive.
Store. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Apu is kind of a dick in this one. He's really not nice.
That thing about how the price was lowered because an escaped mental patient tampered with the Tylenol or the aspirin is based on a real thing that happened in 1982. I looked it up. Apparently, 7 people died in the Chicago area when someone laced Tylenol with cyanide. No one was caught. They assumed it could have been the Unabomber. It wasn't him. I think someone tried to extort the police by saying it was me and give me $1 million, but it wasn't that guy. He just wanted money. So to this day, someone had poisoned these capsules and they were not caught. I think from then on, they were no longer capsules anymore. They were just like the pill form because it was harder to tamper
that's
with.
That's why they're in those those like bubble wrap kind of packaging.
Yeah,
packaged twice.
That too.
We get a rare appearance of brother,
Sanjay.
Sanjay, And we get, I like them speaking Hindi to each other.
Yeah.
See, I'm assuming that was Hindi. There are other languages spoken in India.
Really depending on you guys to know
whether
or
not that
was
because they actually called the Indian consulate, I think, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, and they were not happy about it, but they reluctantly decided to translate things for them. So all the Hindi you hear in this episode is legit.
Respect to white people for finally acting like Indians, right? But
you're welcome.
But seriously, though, I think in the early 90s, a lot of shows would not have bothered to get accurate Indian dialogue.
Including The Simpsons.
Apu is kind of a generic brown convenience store employee. They never get too specific over his real nationality. And putting a language to it
Apu is... It was a very clear reference to the Apu trilogy.
Yeah.
We've
never discussed
the films by Sajid Ray, Apu trilogy. He was... If you were a film student of the 60s and 70s, those were likely the only Indian films you ever saw.
What I just said.
He was the Akira Kurosawa of India back then.
It did seem a little contrived that they immediately were like, no, she's a thief. Like Marge has been shopping there conceivably for, you know, years.
And also, Apu has been robbed already in the show, like, 8 times.
Yeah.
So I remember as a kid thinking that justified his dickishness because we've never seen anybody get caught for stealing from the Quickie Mart. It happens to him. So when he almost catches somebody, like, yes, let's do this.
I guess it's the first time he's actually caught somebody.
Get excited. Yeah. This is finally happening. And Sanji is here to see it.
So there's a couple levels to that where first it feels like Marge totally just forgot. She's pulling things out of her pockets, and she left one thing in her pocket. Mm. But then when she says...
Colonel Quickie Mart's bourbon.
Yeah.
I do love that. You did not pay Colonel Quickie Mart's Kentucky bourbon. But then when she says, no, I guess I didn't, I was just like, why isn't she giving her real excuse now?
Yeah.
Like, I forgot, I'm sorry. But when she says, no, I guess I didn't, that then made me think, so was she reflexively going like, F you, I'm not paying for this then. You charged me $25 for this bottle of aspirin.
I think she was just so harried and frazzled, she just was just, you know, reacting in the moment.
Yeah.
She didn't have time to be outraged or indignant about being accused of theft. She's like, I didn't.
Was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the cops show up immediately this time for nothing.
Nothing with coconut. that was all really wonderful. It makes our convenience store seem amazing. I went in there one time, left my card at the bar, tried to buy some whiskey. They don't take Discover cards. Mm. That's why I got it, so I'm not tempted to use it. And the guy's like, just take it, come back tomorrow, give me some money. I'm like, you rule. This city rules.
I know where you live.
And so then Act 2 begins with Lionel Hutz's Rock Bottom.
Ooh,
this then just becomes the Lionel Hutz show.
Yeah.
For one whole act, it's all him.
Now don't you worry, Mrs. Simpson. We've drawn Judge Snyder.
Is that bad?
Well, he's had it in for me ever since I kind of ran over his dog.
You did?
Well, replace the word kinda with the word repeatedly, and the word dog with son.
That should get the line of the show because it's a great line. But
it really paints a picture. I want to know what situation he was in and where that could have happened. Repeatedly running over a boy.
It's one of my favorite all-time lines. Yeah. Like, well, so then why are you free if you repeatedly ran over the son of a judge?
Well, I guess later we do see his raging alcoholism, so that could have explained it.
But still, it's like, I don't care if you are an alcoholic. You should be in jail.
Yeah.
You ran over this guy a bunch of times. This is also the first time that character, that judge is named Snyder. That's why he's called Snyder from now
on. Maybe he moved for a bad court thingy during his trial.
That's true. Might have worked.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you, fine folks, for listening. Hope you're not too bored. You know what the perfect solution is for being bored and always has been? Goddamn video games. That's why this episode is brought to you by Gamefly. And just so you know, you listeners can go to gameflyoffer.com/lasertime and get started with a free 30-day trial of the service. What is Gamefly? It's like Netflix, but for games. You should know that by now. You create a queue. They ship out 2 to 3 games to you. It's up to you. You play them for as long as you want, ship them back, and they'll just keep on shipping stuff from your queue. This is a great way to save money on not only playing a bunch of new releases, a bunch of old releases, because not only does Gamefly have over 8,000 titles ranging from PS4, Xbox One, Wii U, PS Vita, they go all the way back to the original Wii, the original Xbox, PS2 in certain cases. I know, right? And to sweeten the service even more, Gamefly GameFly allows you to buy a game back. Have you kept it out for a long time? Do you want to just keep it? Are you that settled into the multiplayer? You can buy that game back from GameFly at an extremely reduced cost, and they'll send you the box and manual as if you purchased it anywhere else. Once again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can get started with a 30-day free trial for yourself by going to GameFlyOffer.com/LaserTime. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on Patreon.com/LaserTime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. The movie we watched was called Walk the Dark Streets, and I thought it had the most amazing premise ever. The movie fucking sucks. World War II vets finally meet up again. One guy's desperate for the money, and the other guy's doing pretty well. And the guy's like, I'm a trophy hunter. I'll pay you to hunt him through L.A., but it's about two guys hunting one another through LA. I'm like, why hasn't somebody done the movie of two people hunting one another in the city? That'd be so cool.
Well, it kind of did with The Pest. And just talk about on 302010.
And Assassins. Yeah, but
Predator 2.
But they're not hunting one another. Like, that's what I think is the
cool.
So
you think the one thing holding back The Pest is that John Leguizamo didn't get to hunt back Jeffrey Jones?
There's no X to his sever.
Okay.
I'm like, I don't even know if that's an apt reference.
I don't
have not
either,
seen
but
the film.
For some reason, I was like, yeah.
I play two Game Boy games.
I think most people remember the movie, though, for the hit song from it. That one is like, come on, get off the floor, everybody walk the dark streets.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Yes. Hey, spoiler, Lionel Hutz will get line of the show.
Oh, for sure. Period. Oh, my God, yes.
And so. I also didn't like how Apu and it was celebrating. Like, he's dancing around, listening to music, like, and we're going to put that bitch on ice. I was like, that's
I've seen really Apu brought up in a lot of articles on tokenism and stereotypes, and I always want to be really quick to defend, just because I love Apu and I don't want to imagine a world without him. This is the one where, like, oh, wow, that was just a bunch of nonsense words and weird dancing. Here. Homer tries to plead with Apu to drop the charges on Marge.
I'd like you to drop the charges against my wife.
No offense, but we're putting that bitch on ice.
Now, come on. I'm your best customer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Homer, but it is the policy of the Quickie Mart and its parent corporation, Nordine Defense Dynamics, to prosecute shoplifters to the full extent of the law.
Yeah, that was not authentic.
They at least got one. They got one bit of Hindi right in this episode.
I do like Chris's explanation, though, that he finally has nailed a thief. And I do like the general story of Apu. He's like, he's an immigrant. He came over full of hope, but then he realized he'd become as crooked as any like American businessman. And that's what he does in his job.
Like, oh, that's America. I have to be as crooked as a white man. I get it. Also, we get, I think, one of the last scenes ever of a Wiggum and Quimby secret meeting.
Yeah.
Which then leads to something that I have a bit of a history explainer for as well.
All right.
Please do.
Don't tell anyone, but Marge Simpson was arrested for shoplifting.
Let the word go forth from this time and place. Marge Simpson is a shoplifter.
Hey!
In other news, the chick in the crying game is really a man. I mean, man, is that a good movie? Yeah!
Give us hell, Quimby.
So that was absolutely redone dialogue. Oh. Like, it was so his mouth is all wrong.
Yeah,
even the crowd's mouth is
it's all off. But so I wonder what the original line is. Mm-hmm. But that one is a very loaded line. Like, first off, as a kid, I didn't get it.
Same here.
My mom had to explain to me. She had seen the movie, though, for her to explain that that a woman had a penis in a movie, I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty famous for that sequence because that is the end of the movie. The woman,
it opened up doors to decades of transphobia jokes in films of just like, she's got a dick, vomit. It's so gross.
In that movie's offense, no one ever remembers Forrest Whitaker is in it. And he's awesome in most awesome of the movie.
Yeah,
and that like Stephen Ray's like, oh, well, whatever.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, he also
her.
Doesn't. He gets grossed out at first, and then by the end of the movie, he's with her. Mm-hmm. No, the film The Crying Game isn't so much about that as it's about like Ireland and the IRA, and it's a Neil Jordan masterpiece. Like, he's great. Really good. I love Neil Jordan. So a lot of people hadn't seen it at that point. All right, so here's a quick history of The Crying Game. It did come out in 92, the year before this.
Right.
But many people didn't see it until it got nominated for Oscars, including the lead actor. Was nominated. Actor. Crying Game was being sold as a twist you won't believe, a twist like keep it to yourself. And this is when modern spoiler culture became real with this one. There were films before of just like, don't tell anybody about the shocking ending of this movie, keep it to yourself.
Like Psycho.
Dorothy's dreaming.
but this was one of the big ones of modern spoiler culture for us, at least as I remember it. And there is a moment that typifies it. I sent you a clip, Chris, from Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel at their At the Movie show. So this is modern spoiler culture, this start of here. So every year on the Siskel and Ebert weekly show, they would do If We Picked the Winners special, which they would actually like almost do as an award show unto itself.
Yeah, there's an audience there.
With an audience there, and they're in tuxes, and they're just like, these are the nominees for the Oscars, and we're picking who would win. And so they get to the supporting actor category. And Siskel then says, this is who I pick, the actor from The Crying Game. Mm-hmm. Then comes a big chyron on the screen that says, turn down your audio now if you haven't seen Crying Game yet.
Wow.
And Roger Ebert is just like, I can't believe you're going to say this. Meanwhile, Gene Siskel's like, no, the film's been out for months. Mm-hmm. And the actor is nominated in the actor category. Mm-hmm. So this is not a spoiler. They're not even using the word spoiler. So then Gene Siskel talks about why he is giving it away on TV and talk about the person's performance. He has to talk about the spoilers. Mm-hmm. And so this is him finishing it up. And then Roger Ebert is not pleased afterwards. Ooh.
Going to be called upon to be very tough. I think it's easily the most difficult performance of the year. Whether it's a supporting performance is debatable. I think it's a starring performance, actually. Could it have been done better, however, or as well? And if so, by whom? And Roger, if you disagree with me on this one, I'm going to be very upset. I think it's a spectacular performance.
Well, first of all, I don't think you should have given The Secret away, because very few people have actually seen this film in terms of a national television audience. I think it was cheating, because to me, one of the real pleasures of watching this film was to walk in there and not know until a crucial moment in the film what the secret was. I don't know if people turned down their sets in time, and I think it was you were, in order to make your opinion, what you were doing was you were keeping them from enjoying what I think and what I agree with you is a great performance.
Well, the question would be, how can I do criticism of this work without talking about why I think it's so much of a stronger performance? And unfortunately, what we're going to end up debating now is whether I should have given The Secret away as opposed to whether or not...
Very good performance. Yeah, it is a good performance.
Well, let's see if you pick...
I'll suck a dick, Siskel.
God, I miss both of those guys so much.
They're both right.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's a good argument.
Well, and so a thing comes up on the screen and just says, like... Turn volume down, Crying Game controversy.
That reeks of, like, a behind-the-scenes battle that Roger Ebert won.
Yeah. Like,
you better put up this on the screen before this airs.
It's an okay compromise, but it's very awkward. Like, no one had ever done that before, at least to my knowledge.
Just give it away. Well, because people... Guess what? There wasn't an internet then, so you couldn't just go online and say, what was the ending of Crying Game? You wouldn't know.
Less than a year later, Ace Ventura would give it away in an extremely transphobic show.
Let's like put a new ending on that movie so you can watch it again.
That's why that joke was in there. Mm-hmm. Siskel, my mom directly referenced Siskel giving it away and people getting mad at him for doing it on the show.
I'm so glad you looked that up, because I knew like which critic was it, but I didn't have time to look it up. God.
So that's why I looked it up. But yeah, that's how it was a controversial thing then, and that's why they put it in the show. So then on top of that, The Simpsons are being like kind of dicks of it in May. So that was in March. Mm-hmm. This was May, early May, and they're like, yeah, the Chicken Grind Game was really a man. What? Like,
that's pretty awful.
Yeah. But it was for the purposes of a joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is that Simpsons joke explained.
So, Chris, I wrote something down that you would like. We have the return of one of your favorite lines. So Ned talks about his brush with the law.
Yeah.
And the guy comes to the door and says, excuse me, are you Ed Flanders? Yeah. He's like, no, I'm Ned Flanders. Oh, my mistake.
Now, Marge, don't you worry. We've all had our brushes with the law.
Are you Ed Flanders?
No, Ned Flanders.
My mistake.
There you go. I know Chris loves that line.
So happy with it. I think it's even the same.
It's not.
It's not. It's just Dan Castellaneta doing the same voice. Okay. Yeah.
And the
I would love to, if anybody knows if that's a reference to something, because if it happened more than once,
Dan like, would know. Maybe it's like
either it's as funny as I think it is, or
I mean, it might just be a Chicagoan parlance. Like that's yeah. where he's from. You might just be like, "That's how we say it in Chicago."
I mean, or it could be a reading from an old movie because Doe is a Laurel and Hardy thing. I mean, they could be pulling these things from their brain, you know, just for the sake of performance.
They also go by the fact that Marge has webbed toes, which was not kept ever. Like no. that was lost. Same as like they never talk about how Marge has been grazed a mule since she was 17. Mm. They never talk about that either, but that her web toes were mentioned on her trading card.
Oh, really? Wow.
It was they had like kind of a picture-in-picture fact on the Simpsons trading cards, which I think we're about a year away from them in Simpsons timeline.
Jesus,
here.
Really? Marge is so ill-defined. That's why she's a fucking vacuum in the arcade game.
Yeah, really?
No traits.
I do love the joke about judgmental Christians where Maud is peering through the God bless you cross stitch, and Marge adjusts the picture and she's like, get out.
But Maud is Norman Bates in that scene.
She
is crazy.
She's not about to masturbate though.
She's not Vince Vaughn. But I think that was the scene that finally got me to rent Psycho, because I like finally it was like the fourth time my parents would tell me that's from Psycho. I was like, all right, I gotta watch this. Which, by the way, that wasn't spoiled for me, the twist of that, before I saw it.
Oh, wow.
I got to, just like a viewer in 1964 or 7, I forget the year exactly.
Like a 60.
Oh, 60.
Another trans situation.
Just like a viewer back then. I like at the end of that movie, and by like, I mean I'm entertained by it. At the end of that movie, they have to say like, oh, so he's a transvestite. They're like, well, no, not exactly. He's actually like...
We should have ended this movie 5 minutes ago. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
It's much worse than
that. No, he needs to look at a bug.
Yeah.
He wears his mother's skin. Please don't throw the trans audience under the bus. I didn't watch Psycho, actually, because I watched a billion clips of it in all my film classes. So I've studied every granular detail of like 7 scenes, but I'd never actually seen it until 2 years ago. It's phenomenal.
It is. It's way different than what you think it is. Because it's just, it's very slow, intense, and like... Like the murder is just like a minute of the movie, and it's just all drawn out tension.
Anthony Perkins, like, I don't what you, that for that year, that is one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. He is charismatic as AF, and like his performance holds up really goddamn well. Watch Psycho.
And so then we're back into the courtroom where they kind of just do every Lyle Hutz joke they can.
Yeah.
The blue-headed lawyer gets a good one off.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, who do you find more attractive? Tom Cruise or Mel Gibson?
What is the point of all this?
Your Honor, I feel so confident of Marge Simpson's guilt that I can waste the court's time by raiding the Super Hunks.
Wow. Raiding the Super Hunks.
Ooh, he's gonna win.
Mr. Hutz.
Didn't I?
That is Marge's line. It's like Marge's line with Hutz.
It's the only time she doesn't grumble. Yeah. She actually says something.
At some point, she says, why do we always hire him? Much later. And that's what I asked myself during this scene. Like, why did they hire Lionel Hutz again?
It's really all you can afford.
Yeah.
Especially, and this is rock bottom for him, where we get more into his alcoholism. He did drink all of that bottle of whiskey before. Like, one little sip of whiskey. Like, it's 9:30. Who cares?
Brownest of brown liquors.
I always think of it as brownest of the brown liquors now.
And if we freeze on frame 138, we distinctly see a puff of blue hair coming from the grassy knoll.
Now, Apu, Mrs. Simpson claims that she forgot she was carrying that bottle of delicious bourbon. Brownest of the brown liquors. So tempting. What's that? You want me to drink you? But I'm in the middle of a trial. Excuse me. Hello, David. I'm really tempted.
Just take it one day at a time and know that I love you.
I love you too, man.
It's a real Dr. Joyce Brothers style guest appearance. I get one sentence.
But I would guess the most specific Alcoholics Anonymous reference I've ever seen.
That's a sponsor, really.
So, well, first off, I could just... Hearing it isolated like this, I could just see Phil Hartman in my mind saying all those lines.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
And I love the sound of the alcohol swishing around in the bottle. Yeah. It's very, very distinct.
Is it really David Crosby?
It is, yeah. David Crosby, which I felt was a little too hard. It was a little too try hard of like, he's looking at his own albums and surrounded by it.
Yeah.
It's not clearly him.
It's like only one guy looks like him, and that's David Crosby.
I was reading the Phil Hartman biography a few years. Phil Hartman, before he was an improviser and actor, he was an album artist designer,
yeah.
And he may have designed the album. Ah. I don't think that's true. I'm trying to find the specific.
That's when
albums.
His name had two N's in it.
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
A much more Germanic way of saying it, which he was fluent in the German.
This might not be worth even mentioning. I can't find the fucking albums that he designed. But Phil Hartman drew illustrations for album covers for music like Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
So as a kid, I really didn't. I barely knew Crosby, Stills, and Nash or David Crosby. And I didn't know that he was famous as the recovering alcoholic. Like, that was his thing. Or recovering substance abuser, not just alcohol.
I'm just recalling this. Did he give his sperm to a famous lesbian couple?
Yes,
Melissa,
that's what I thought. Yeah, it's like, I want those genes in this body.
No, why would she want that? But
exactly. So, turning me down for that motherfucker.
So in 82 and 85, he was arrested for drunk driving and substance abuse.
Oh, okay.
Spent 9 months in jail, even. You got to be pretty bad as a celebrity.
They locked up celebrities then, I think.
And so by 1993, he was famous for getting sober, and then he was in AA and getting other people sober. We'll get a sequel to this joke in the B Sharps episode.
Oh, you're
much.
Right. Yeah.
The more obvious way of doing a joke about Crosby being drunk. And that now the parody of him would have been that he got arrested for like a bunch of knives. Like he got arrested for bringing a bunch of weapons through an airport.
Wow, I didn't know that.
That was more recent arrest. That was about
wouldn't
10
know it
years
from
ago.
His music.
Really,
I
look
like
at him.
Sneak knives in around. I love you.
Now, Apu's photographic memory has never been brought back again.
That is,
though, I guess it must have helped him as a computer engineer.
Yeah,
this be my line of the shizzle. Yes.
That's the joke.
Well, if you never forget anything, tell me this: what color tie am I wearing?
You are wearing a red and white striped club tie in a half Windsor knot.
Oh, I am I? Is that what you think? Well, if that is what you think, I have something to tell you. Something that may shock and discredit you. And that thing is as follows. I'm not wearing a tie at all.
But if I am wrong about that, maybe I am wrong about Mrs. Simpson.
That should have been how he won the case. Whatever.
Yeah, I do like how everybody else sees him doing this with his tie.
Not
and
the
then,
jury.
Yeah,
Huss is removing his, taking so long to remove his tie.
He's like struggling with it.
So
everybody sees it.
For another episode of Chris's Simpson Shorthand, half of my life is spent introducing clips and waiting for things to load. And that... those lines have become like, and it sounded a little something like this, if that's what you think. Because if that is what you think, this page isn't loading.
That's true.
It happens on streams. It happens everywhere. I don't know how much we edit it out. It happens all the time.
Speaking of pre-internet research, as I was earlier, they had to call up David H. Bailey of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration to get pi to the 40,000th numeric.
Yeah, now you can just Google it.
Yeah, but they, the Oakley and Weinstein said that they got like shipped a printout of it all the way to that.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
and it's accurate too.
Yes,
so.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat.
Fucking more.
It is one
more great huts.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah. That's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy. Right.
This is his finest hour.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So, you don't have a clip of it I see there, but Clarence Darrow, I should let the audience know, I actually didn't get this joke until now.
That Lisa compared.
Well, so she compares him to Clarence Darrow, who, in case you didn't know, he lived from 1857 to 1935. Early human rights attorney and a leading member of the ACLU back in the day, which give them some support, guys.
They'll be shut down by the time this airs.
All in jail, held
in the gulags.
But so Darrow most famously argued in the Scopes Monkey Trial.
That's correct.
Which was the to teach evolution in schools, which settled the debate forever, and yes. It would never be a problem in American schools again.
Watch Inherit the Wind, the old one. Yeah. It's very good.
Now, the black guy from the Mod Squad is Clarence Williams III.
Yes. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Samson from Half-Baked.
That's how our generation
Or the host
it.
Of Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was he is Samson.
Well, talk to Samson.
But that he's this was the first time I got that joke that the Clarence is the name of the actor who played the black guy on the Mod Squad, not the Claire Danes film, the original Mod Squad from the
No 70s. One remembers either one.
It was just on my awful antenna TV, and he is in the movie, cameoing.
Yeah, oh wow, we also missed during the. I mean, you can't. Hear it, but Lionel Hutz's dick is hanging out, and he has no pants on in the bad court thingy.
Yeah, that's right. It's right after the, you're not wearing pants. And that scene just continues. It's just like, well, you didn't go to put on pants.
He solid snakes himself against the judge's podium or whatever you call that.
The joke is even better because he's asking the judge that without pants.
Yeah.
You don't even see it in frame.
With just his ass hanging out.
You will never be allowed to see that much of his ass again.
Yeah, no, I like that he had sock garters.
That was cute.
Nice extra. And then there's another joke they lost, which was, he says, could you imagine the world without lawyers? Mm. And then it's everybody at peace. Mm. And they wanted to play the I'd like to teach the world to sing song, but they couldn't get the rights to it, so they just pretty much play the first five notes of it.
Yeah, and it's a little off. It's the Coke song, right? Like
yeah,
to buy the world
as
Coke.
Invented by Don Draper, as we all know. Spoilers for Mad Men.
Man, I guess I haven't seen that last season.
You have not seen the last episode of Mad Men?
Last season.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry I spoiled it for you.
My bad.
But hey, if you should have seen it by now, I'm on the Gene Siskel side,
bad.
Man.
If I haven't seen it by now, I don't care. But Marge does go to jail for about 2 minutes.
Yes, it's true.
Marge, I'm going to miss you so much. And it's not just the sex. It's also the food preparation. Your skill with stains of all kinds. But mostly I'll miss how lucky you make me feel each and every morning.
I'll miss you too, homie.
That's another of my favorite Hutz lines in this, when he's being sued by the National Council of Churches. He says, like, oh, right, that thing.
Yeah. There's a really great anecdote on the commentary about the line Marge says, who's minding the Quickie Mart?
She was supposed to say that as a callback to Lisa Beauty Queen, where she says, who's minding the Quickie Mart, and people are robbing it because they're both at Little Miss Springfield Pageant.
But in this scene, Marge wouldn't give a shit, because she's pissed off they put her in jail. So when reading the line, Julie Kavner initially said, who's minding the Quickie Mart and who the fuck cares? So really? I wish they would have had that on tape or something that, because I really would have wanted to hear Marge swear.
And she was right. That was selling out Marge's character. Yeah. She wouldn't care about the people who just put her in jail.
I think Oakley and Weinstein build in a line that will like make it a little more reasonable, but it still kind of stands out. Like, why would she be concerned about the Quickie Mart in any case? Yeah.
And I also, as a kid, I loved Bart's dream sequence.
Bartina.
Really with the warden. It was just what a 10-year-old would dream up, a Bugs Bunny type plan.
Yeah.
And that was the first, but not the last, down I go.
I love that, like, the throwaway line of, like, I'll bust you out as soon as I get a crowbar and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's not terribly funny as a joke, and I do like that it gets funnier when they show it. Like, normally I hate that with The Simpsons.
And he says, I need a crowbar. He doesn't use it to pry anything open. He uses it to smash the guy in the face.
Yeah, I think that was what they were
That was
going
a joke,
for.
Too, yeah.
And so then it's finally time for the brief third act where they really...
We get two scenes of Marge without the family there, pretty much.
I mocked it on the front, and I think it's true here, too, that it's like... The idea of ideas like Homer leading a strike, Homer going back to high school, Marge going to prison, those are strong enough for real episodes that actually focus on that. Yeah. But in all three of those episodes, they're like, they just aren't given enough time
and this
or focus.
This episode also retreads a lot of Homer Alone stuff, where it's Homer being terrible at raising the family by himself and just fucking everything up immediately.
Oh, yeah.
It's still kind of funny,
kids,
though.
While your mother's gone, I don't want to have to wash any dishes. So from now on, drink straight from the faucet or milk carton, and we'll eat while standing over the sink or toilet.
Who's going to change Maggie?
We're going to let her roam free in the backyard, and nature will take its course.
I cannot believe how much I've adopted that philosophy.
Eat over the sink or toilet.
Everything I eat on purpose, I was joking my girlfriend, comes with its own plate. It's either on a bun or in a burrito shell.
How about a bread bowl?
La-di-da, I poured my own beer in a glass.
I drink water directly from the faucet all the time. Not so much from the carton, just from the faucet.
But they heighten the Homer Alone stuff of him wearing... running out of clothes and wearing stuff from the attic, which is funny, though that can't be Marge's dress. Marge's dress wouldn't fit him.
No, that's a stretch.
Yeah, well, though Mona Simpson's dress wouldn't fit him either. Boy, the prison inmates were quite butch, weren't they?
Yes.
Knock, knock. I'm Marge Simpson, your new cellmate.
I'm Phillips. They call me that because I killed my husband with a Phillips head screwdriver.
This character actually reminds me of the similar looking character on Orange is the New Black, who in an episode...
His name is Boo.
Boo, who steals a screwdriver to use it to masturbate with, and it's a big plot point.
That was a great payoff in that episode. Yeah. In the first episode of the whole series, they say, like, look, this isn't Oz. And that's them talking to the audience, too, like, this isn't Oz.
Yeah.
This isn't also a Cinemax thriller. Like, this women's prison is different from a regular one. And you think the whole time, if you were watching a show about men in prison, you think, well, they stole that screwdriver to murder someone. Like, that's what it is. And so when you finally find out where the missing screwdriver ever went is being used as the handle for a corn dildo.
Yes, that's right.
That's how Boo is using it, which, hey, that is ingenious.
Yeah, Boo rules.
I love her. Mm-hmm. But, so Phillips is pretty much that. And then the Matt Fold-in was pretty great, too. I love that bit.
I love all the Mad jokes. God, that other than The Simpsons and, like, Ren and Stimpy, Mad was still kind of one of the most important things in my life.
What kind of slime would I marry?
Yes.
But, all right, I don't want to sound too heartless.
Al Jaffee's still with us. Don't talk shit.
Yes, he will live until we post this, at least.
I love him.
I don't want to sound too heartless, but... So Marge is there for 30 days, and if my mom went to jail for 30 days, I would be sad, and I would be... But... Would they really be like, oh, Mom, I miss you so much? Like, it's been 2 weeks. Like,
lots of visits. I don't know, but you're a kid, like days feel like weeks.
And, I guess so.
And Homer's their only parent, so it's got to accentuate the loss there.
But also, like, Marge is thirsty after, like, again, she's been at best 3 weeks without Homer. Like, I don't know.
It's not as dirty as her teaching me stroke formation with a whacking video like that.
Yeah.
Slow then fast.
Oh, Jesus. I still can't get over it.
But I thought it was real cute how Bart and Nelson connected.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing.
All right. Bologna and cheese. What do you got, Bart?
Pack of sugar and peanut butter smeared on a playing card.
Ha ha. Your mom's a jailbird.
So's yours.
Oh, yeah. Let's play.
It's no peanut butter, eggs, and dice sandwich.
I love that. My shoes are...
It's Mr. Show.
Mr. Show, yes.
And the more I learn about...
You love Jimmy Carter.
The more I learn about this president, the more amazing he is to me. Mm.
There are two distinct stances on the writing team. Mm.
Al Jean fucking hates him.
On the commentary, Al Jean's like, I loathe Jimmy Stewart. I hate the man.
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, sorry. You're not Jimmy Stewart. God damn it. That's happened before. I love Jimmy Stewart. No, he said...
Hot dog.
I hate Jimmy Carter. I loathe the man. And Matt Groening is offended. He's like, you Hollywood weirdo.
Yes.
And he's like, and then Al Jean's like, well, if he was running against Bush, I'd vote for him probably.
They're recording in 2004. Yeah. So he says, I hope I get my chance this year. I feel like there was like early rumors in 2004, like maybe Jimmy Carter will run against him.
Why don't you take a look at presidents who went and worked for think tanks and hedge corporations and which one literally saved lives across the world and still is despite being almost dead.
It's
going to be a test to see what Obama does after it too. Like, though he was so young, we've probably got like 40, should America continue to exist, we've probably got like 40 years of Obama philanthropy ahead of us.
Meanwhile, Oakley and Weinstein thought this was a joke, a satire of how people hated him for no reason.
Yeah. But it does work like that, too.
It does, too. I think it works both ways. But I feel like it's, I didn't live through that period of time, but I feel like maybe it's a little... we've had so many worse presidents since
then. When we talk about Simpsons shorthand, if any of you assholes hear his name, you will say the line of the Springfield crowd people in the sequence.
$15 short. Exactly what Marge Simpson's marshmallow squares bring in. Can we still afford that statue of Lincoln?
No, I'm afraid we'll have to go with something cheaper.
I
give you our 39th president, Jimmy Carter.
Oh, come on!
He's history's greatest monster!
My favorite music?
Yes. So, Hank, do you want to explain Malaise Forever?
I will explain it. Okay. I have a link as well.
Oh, nice.
Well, so first off, I think their hatred of Carter, it's very a pre-Clinton thing. Clinton was more like a sequel to Carter anyway, or at least he appeared that way in 92, no, I think.
Yes.
In 92, he did. It was okay, it's another Southern Democrat who is showing like, see, I do hate blacks and I'll put them in jail.
And if you read about how high gas prices were during that gas crisis, you'd be like, you're a baby.
You could, that's true. But I also think that hatred of Carter goes through Reagan into the continuation of Reagan's administration with H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
And so I think it was just people hadn't remembered, like, no, Carter wasn't bad.
Yeah. History will smile upon Jimmy Carter.
He sucks, but apparently people hated him. He was seen as a weenie, as a wuss who put on sweaters and
wore a sweater.
And told Americans not to consume as much. Yeah. Like, fucking dare he?
Enforce laws to not have cars shit into the air constantly.
Yes.
Which people all over the world, left and right, hated them.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying that people here in California still has that. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't drive a car unless it's tested for emissions and smog checks.
It was a shock when I moved here. Like, smog test. Glad I don't have a car.
That's thing, man. Like, he did that for the nation during a gas crisis. So everybody hated him.
But again, how dare he, right?
We have the right to be wasteful, old man.
Try to teach us a metric system? Fuck up.
Love that. Put solar panels on the White House. Reagan came in. Tore them down. Tore them down to pay more money.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we never see any more vindictive moving into the White House like that again.
Never.
So, Malaise Forever, though, is on a statue. And that is a reference to a very specific speech by Carter, which I had never really looked into.
Same
until
here,
this
until today.
Episode. So, America was in crisis. Like, people were very worried, like, prices just seem to be going up and up and up. Are we screwed? This is the stuff you can see they were attracted to a fucking actor, like, who could act like a strong man a year later. So apparently Carter goes missing for a few days.
I think it was 10 days.
10
I read.
Days,
yeah.
That is incredible to imagine. Like, that would be hard for me to forgive too. Of just like, well, Obama was gone for 10 days when people were worried. Not great.
Prediction, you'll see it again. A lot.
Oh, yes.
A lot.
Someone's going to be very unreachable.
And you won't see him on news footage clearing brush in Lubbock, Texas either.
So when he comes back, he gives a speech called the Crisis of Confidence speech. Mm. And I have a clip here that's got an intro to explain it in time. And he never even says the word malaise, but that's what it got labeled as.
2 years ago today that Jimmy Carter gave his famous malaise speech. He never used that term, but that's the name that was given to a speech in which the president said the country's economic woes were due in part to a crisis of confidence in the country. It has come to be known as perhaps the most politically tone-deaf speech in modern American history.
Mm.
Take a look.
It is a crisis of confidence. It is a crisis that strikes at the very heart and soul and spirit of our national will. We can see this crisis in the growing doubt about the meaning of our own lives and in the loss of a unity of purpose for our nation. The erosion of our confidence in the future is threatening to destroy the social and the political fabric of America.
I kind of don't disagree with that.
I kind of have a problem saying the problem is countries that you don't believe.
Yeah, you got to believe
ending.
Harder.
Our good buddy Obama said, if we just believe in America, the Russians won't hurt us. So it's a very common, like, unrealistic solution.
It's stupider than all that shit Reagan said.
Yes, yes.
But learning in America.
But so, yeah, he disappears for 10 days and then shows up with that speech about, like, well, why are all these prices going up? Why are we all worried? It's because you don't believe enough. And it was...
I could see that turning people against him,
yeah,
for sure.
And so then people saw that as him accusing America of being stuck in a general malaise, a depression, but not an economic depression. But,
yeah.
And so from then on, he got labeled with the malaise thing. Before that, he was the peanut farmer. But,
true, yeah.
But
he had lust in his heart.
Which he sold before he became president.
Yes. Because
that's what presidents did.
He was ready to sacrifice a peanut farm. I mean, that's what greater sacrifice can one man get?
But I got to play this clip, because this would have been my line of the show if not for all the Lionel Hutz.
Release the dogs.
Gee, they look pretty mad.
Yeah, I've been starving them, teasing them, singing off key. Me, me, my, mo, me, moo, my.
No, this never would have happened if Marge Simpson was here.
I love that singing off key.
Yeah.
My mamu. And nice early, we didn't have the term butterfly effect in the mainstream, but that was totally, this is the butterfly effect that Marge wasn't there to sell the marshmallow squares leading to, that eventually leads to Springfield in crisis.
It's funny, no one had like the $20 they would have brought in just to throw at the statue.
They just go like, nope, 15, the exact amount Marge Simpson used to bring in.
And then Marge is released from prison to quell the anger of the townspeople.
Yeah. Well, no, the 30 days were up. It was only 30
days. Oh, really?
Days.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, Snyder sentences her to 30 days. So
when did the riots start?
I guess on day 21 or
okay,
something.
Wow. Like, for some reason, I thought like that was a direct result of the riots, Marge being let out.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just assumed that maybe.
No, it was just time.
I think it's your memory. My memory of the episode is Lionel Hutz winning with the tie defense because the Pooh agrees. Maybe I don't remember. And then that someone got her out, but they didn't. Yep. She just went to jail for 30 days. Non-evil punished, but hey, Phillips is rewarded.
Goodbye, Marge. I'll miss you.
I hope you find somebody.
Men are such slime, but I'm seeing this new guy. I think he's different.
Yeah!
He says his name is Homer, and he works at the nuclear plant.
Marge does not ruin her her fun, really.
I feel like that line was redone. The mouth movement was off on that one, too. But
yeah.
I like the implication that Barney just stole Homer's identity when Homer's standing right there.
Yeah.
He's there. And it's also kind of Barney's non-belch catchphrase at this point.
Yes.
He did that to Mo in another
getting
episode,
Getting ahead
too.
Of plugs, patreon.com is how we live. We have season wrap-ups. I gave Barney my MVP of last season.
It's true.
And he just didn't rise to that at all during this whole season.
He's had his moments. He's going to drop off soon.
Well, with the rise of Lenny and Carl, it was the drop of Barney. He just had many more. We need a drunk here. What's this drunk doing?
Yeah, but it was more like just his excitement. Whatever you say, man, and being pepper sprayed and burping. Like, I think that I think the writers were just as fascinated with just having Barney burp.
He ended up serving a very grandpa role where it's like, just put him in for one joke, and that's all he does.
And just to make it up to Marge, they redo the Jimmy Carter statue as her, just put her hair on it. And
it says Marge forever.
Yeah, Marge forever instead of Malaise. And then seeing, like, when they have the ball smack him in the face, I was like, this does feel like a very anti-Jimmy Carter.
I think it's a shot at him.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely. They were meaner to him than Married with Children.
I'm just saying. I wasn't there to. I was there for the first 3 months of Reagan's presidency. The last 3 months of Reagan's presidency.
But since
then, he's like cured malaria all over the world and built houses for people who couldn't afford them. And I don't know any other former president who's done that much good.
No, he's
the
a great man.
And he's in a great episode of King of the Hill, voiced by Dave Herman, unfortunately. Not actually Jimmy Carter.
Did he do paintings? Like,
bad paintings.
Yeah. Yeah, those paintings are bad. One of my favorite Onion jokes was that George W. Bush keeps look at George W. Bush's wonderful paintings, though they all have a dead Iraqi boy in the corner of them. Like, they just can't not paint in there. That guy, he deserves no peace.
Yeah.
Fuck you, buddy.
Whatever history, now think of him much cuter.
I saw that.
Aww,
we're recording this
grandpa.
We're recording this on Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
The photos of
adorable.
The photos of him there, I feel like he was just loving, like, I'm not the most hated person here.
Sweet little grandpa war criminal.
Like, yeah. I mean, his hair is light. He's getting bald.
Yeah.
His dad's about to die.
Yeah. We can only hope.
Oh, boy.
If him and Barbara die the same day, boy, that'd be great.
Off to those 10,000 points of light in the sky.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up here. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. You can find that every Monday at Retronauts.com. It's a classic gaming podcast about classic games. It's great. Go to Retronauts.com or go to Retronauts on Twitter, and you will find it there. Everybody else, where can we find you?
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter is where you'll find me, trying to not slip my wrists, but also enjoying things and enjoying life, and like seeing tweets. You'll see tweets from my SF Sketchfest shows I've been attending, which have just been tons of fun. There was the Brain Candy live reading, and we got to see.
Just literally got back from a King of the Hill
live King of the Hill 20th anniversary, which was amazing. Greg Daniels was there of Simpsons fame, but Well, more so office fame, but the American workplace. But anyway, that was great. I write for fandom.com. You can see my works on video games there. But more importantly, patreon.com/lasertime. That's what supports this show and keeps it going strong. Every dollar helps, and we really would appreciate any help you can do. $5 a month will get you access to the entire first season of Talking Simpsons, which is not available on our iTunes stream, mm-hmm. plus our season wrap-ups mm-hmm. for 2 and 3 and soon to be 4, other tons of great special things. Do you want to watch us do a live commentary for the WWE Flintstones crossover movie? It's on there!
The 2003 Royal Rumble or... Audio commentaries for Jackie Chan's First Strike and Black Dynamite is voted upon by the Patreon.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, really fun. And also the show Laser Time, where we just pick a topic, do kind of a show like this, but it's topic-based, not Simpsons-based. But if you like something you can set your watch by, 30-20-10, a look back at 30, 20, and 10 years ago in the past, and I believe next week... We had to bring up The Simpsons. Very important. We won't get to it for years. Poochie. It's the debut of Poochie.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
Deep in season 8. Another of those episodes that were like, we're almost done. Simpsons is over.
February 97, I believe. Wow. Mm-hmm.
So thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Krusty's comeback special, the season 4 finale. We'll see you then.
Infotainment.